Good morning, comrades. You're listening to our third day edition of Good Morning, Comrades. This is just going to be Jeff for the show, but I'm just going to really kick it to an interview with a guy I met about a month ago at the picket that took place at the UAW's parts facility in Brandon, Mississippi. This fellow named Jamal, who was one of the union stewards for the local United Auto Workers for that facility out in Brandon, which is a small town just outside of Jackson. So I'm just going to kick it straight over to the interview with Jamal. You can check out all of our stuff on whivfm.com/goodmorningcomrade. You can also check us out on our website, goodmorningcomrade.com. And yeah, listen up. Tell me what you think.
Whatever that we wanted, they've been gave in. And it just wasn't quite like that. It really wasn't.
Yeah. Sounds to me like GM kind of knew what was coming, and they were ready for this whole situation.
Yeah, they were prepared. I can truly say that me and the rest of my UAW brothers and sisters, especially at our facility, we had no idea that the strike would last a month and a half.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah, no idea that last month and a half. No idea. That took us off guard, or completely off guard. And you got to look at it like this right here. Coming from a facility that I would say at least 80% of the employees never been through a strike.
Right.
Yeah. We didn't even know. We didn't even have a clue of what needed to be done or what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were even scrambling trying to get our strike material and stuff together.
Was that your first ever strike that you ever participated in?
Yes. It was. Mm-hmm. It really was. It was my first strike. I will say this much right here. I can't say it was a great learning experience, but it was a great learning experience. And it was an experience I never forget, because also I got a chance to meet a lot of new people, mm-hmm. you know, I will say, my friends for life mm-hmm. behind it, really.
That's important.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's very good, and it was touching that a lot of people came through and gave the support that they did, you included. Mm-hmm. You know, because it was a lot of down people. It really did put some restraint on a lot of families and stuff, because mm-hmm. some people that had trips and stuff planned and all that, going a month and a half without pay.
Yeah, totally messes your whole year up or whatever, you know.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really did. But I will say it was a much needed, you know, much needed, you know, tool in order for us to get what we did get.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's really, like, touching that you would say that you appreciated the support that we did. I mean, we just came out for one afternoon, and we just wanted to be there to show that we stand with the working people who are just, like, that is the struggle, you know? I mean, the work every day is a struggle, and then, you know, fighting, standing up for yourself when it's important, that's critical.
Yes, but you have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to think about the distance that you all came,
yeah,
and the conditions that day. Now that they were not perfect.
By no means. It was a rainy day.
Exactly.
So I explained this on the show before, but it was on the side of this hill. And it was raining, so there's water just rushing down the gutter the whole time.
Exactly. And I got to give you all credit. Mm-hmm. No one complained. Everybody had a smile on their face.
We were happy.
Everybody
to be-
was yes, everybody, you were sitting there, you were cheerful.
Mm-hmm.
You telling us, hey, yeah, you all don't give up. What you're doing, you know, is very important, you know.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, the whole world sees it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We need people that are more strong. And I thought to myself, I said to myself, you all are calling us strong. Look at what you all are doing. You know, out here on this rainy day, you know, it looked like a monsoon outside.
It was real nasty.
You know, exactly. I mean, nobody complained about it was too cold or it was too wet or whatever. The only thing that was said was, hey, don't give up on the struggle. Don't give up on the fight. I mean, that right there, you need more people. You need more people like that. You really do.
And it's one of those things that there is, like, I don't know. We need all of the working people. We just need one another because we are just so much infinitely stronger when we're all united. You know, when we're all kind of pushing, like, you know, hooked up and walking in step. When we're pushing the same stuff, there's no stopping us.
Correct. I agree with you. And especially people with the passion, the way that you all had. I mean, you all kept us out there that day. You know, I went home and I told my wife, I said, I believe I don't have the flu because of them. I'm serious because, you know, while you all was out there, you know, you were talking and cheering us on and we were discussing things of that nature. I didn't have time to think about it. We didn't think about the fact that we were cold and wet and it was raining, you know. So, I mean, it is what it is. You got to have that. Yeah. The union that you all have together, I mean, you all got a union. Like I said, I would take you all and go to the halls of Congress because I know you all a great backbone.
Well, we'll be there with you, brother.
Exactly. I knew you all going to be there. I don't have to worry about turning around and, whoa, where did my support go to? I mean, it is what
That's
it
a
is.
Bad feeling right there. When you step up to the fight and you turn around and nobody's with you.
Where my brothers and sisters go, you know. I mean, it is what it is. And I truly want to say thank you to you and the rest of the crew. I mean,
that's really cool. And thank you for it means a lot in the terms of when you're simply standing, when working people are simply standing up for themselves, it makes a ripple effect too. So like working people see working people standing up for themselves and they're like, hey, we can do that too. And it actually raises the standard for everybody. So it's like, it's a human thing. Like, you know, we're there for you as the people, but it, like, also, it helps it all when we're on the same page.
It really does.
So yeah, 100%, man. Solidarity forever.
I mean, they have to understand the only way to make enough noise that your voice is heard is with numbers.
Yeah,
making numbers come with the union of the people,
mm-hmm.
and in the working class, you know, where big corporations and stuff try to chump with the money and all. If you don't have the money to throw it, you have to actually start at a grassroot level. You have to start, you know, with the people in the community, and you just have to get together and you make enough noise to where you heard.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know,
and really we talked about this a little bit before we went on air, but the withholding the labor and you denying, I mean, you said that there was a lot of, surplus that GM had, you know, running up to this, but they don't make any amount of money. They're ticked off about that, and the fact that you like that has to go through the workers,
That means that you're in a really like strong leveraging position. If you play your cards right and you do it smart.
If you do it smart, you're right. You're exactly right. You know, first thing first, when your brothers and sisters come to educate you about something, pay attention to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will say that don't let the company and money divide you, because in the end, you are your brothers and your sisters' keeper.
Right.
You know, they're going to be
biblical,
the one,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. You're gonna be the one that take care. You're gonna be her backbone. She's gonna be your backbone, and they're gonna be the one to take care of. Once, because if we were looking towards money or whatever, none of us was working. All right. You had people come out bringing cans and food and drinks and, you know, hey, what do you need for your family? You know, people who had an extra little surplus of money. Hey, is there anybody that needs this and needs that? You were your brother's keeper. You
know? That's beautiful. That's as beautiful as it can be, you know?
Exactly. You know, and these are the people that were for you in your time of need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, hey, for a month and a half, we all were without. You know, mm-hmm. we were without pay. You know, it is what it is. And then that's that. So people, a strong union is worth its weight in gold.
Yeah. You feel tighter with the people that you went out and went on strike with? I know you work with them every day and all the time. Do you think you feel tighter with them since the experience? Or you think at least you know them better?
I'll say this. We've been back at work 2 days.
Yeah.
In those 2 days, I've had people come to me and tell me some stuff that I had to tell them. I said, hey, you do know I'm not a part of your family. you do know I'm not a part of your family, and I don't sit at your dinner table. They said, well, you know what, man? When we was out there on that picket line, it made so much sense to me when we talked and when we shared the stories and the tales that we told or whatever, you know, that, yeah. Hey, they said, man, we pretty much like family now. You know,
that's beautiful.
Yeah, don't let it change now. Well, as a matter of fact, it's funny that you asked that. A lady had just got finished saying that. She said, hey, you know, I'm about to get ready to sell my house. I got to get ready to move out of it. I said, you were talking about selling that house when we were out picking. And she said, yeah. And she said, now, you know what? It's time for, I want the same group that I was picketing with to come help me. So y'all might as well come on.
Yeah. Oh, man, you're going to make me cry over here. That is such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's the truth. You know, she just got finished telling me, you know. Mm-hmm. I will say this much right here. Some people that I didn't really just socialize with, you know, didn't know a whole lot about, you know, I work with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Call me up now and say, hey, Jamal, you know, normally I wouldn't tell or put anybody in my business. I haven't been back to work number 2 days.
Yeah, it works real fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's too fast, right? You know what I'm saying? Just said, Jamal, I'm going to tell you about this. So it's funny that you asked about bringing us closer. Yeah, and it's like a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Once you go through something with a person, you create a bond with them.
Yeah, and you understand them more, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm no better than you. We were out off the job a month and a half. I was right there with you. It doesn't matter if you made $1 million or you made $10.
Yeah.
I went through the same thing you went through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can't be. I'm not any better than you. Whether you thought I was or I thought I was, we went through the same thing, the same time together.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's a big thing, and You know, I think about that happening, and I don't mean to be like a, like too, you know, disgusting about it, but like that happened all across the United States in every GM facility, at least to some extent, maybe to more, maybe, and that's, I don't know, that's a really, that's super powerful to me, just thinking about it.
Matter of fact, and also, like I said, bringing us closer, you know, in our contract, we'll receive a ratification bonus.
Right.
I've already spoke with the people. Hey, look here. For the people who may not qualify for something, for some money on the ratification bonus, I already got together and went, hey, what are we willing to do for the ones that was out?
Yeah. He's got the next step planned. They, I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And they're coming together.
God, that's beautiful.
Because whether we feel like we're better or not better than the next person, they were out there with us at the same time, going through the same thing that we were going through.
Yeah.
So therefore, we're no better than they are.
Right.
And we all work together. And no worse. You're exactly right.
Like your fates. Like all of our fates, all working people's fates are so like intertwined and locked together in its exact same way. You know, like y'all are obviously the people at the purchase facility that you work at are much more directly and immediately connected. But the way that I see it is that like when we can get the working people, all of our fates are intertwined. Just there's a lot more, you know, asterisks and stars and workarounds and towards that. But I think at the end of the day, it's just like all of us in the same pot against the people trying to get as much out of us as possible.
Exactly. So, I love it. Mm-hmm. I do. I love it. Sometimes you have to go through some stuff in order to appreciate something.
Yeah, and you learn every lesson the hard way.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Otherwise, you don't learn it all the way. Really, it's almost right. Like it's cheating to not do it.
Another thing is now some people know what it's like to be a brother and a sister in a union. It was new to them.
Yeah,
you know, they only heard the word union.
Yeah, it's abstract.
Exactly. Now they see, we together out here. This is what we are doing. This is what we are going through. You know, if you need some services done at your house, I have to do this when we go back to work. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. You might have a union brother or sister that can help you out with that now.
Right.
You don't have to wait, you know, save you some money or whatever, because I know times is hard right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's awesome.
You learn a new respect for union, and you learn a new respect for people. You know what I'm saying? Hey, you know, you're not in this world alone. You know, you got your union brother or sister that possibly could help you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was something different. It really was.
It's building community. It's building. I mean, like you said earlier, you said that you know, you didn't realize that these people were family before, but then they suddenly are, and that's basically what it sounds like to me. You know, people are just there, community to help one another.
Yeah, man. It's funny, man. Like I said, I've been back at work 2 days, and I've had a young lady come up to me and say, hey, Jamal, you know, you were with me out there. You ain't done with me. I said, no. She said, you were acting like my brother. I, when we was out there, I said, I still am your brother. What you need?
Yeah. That don't end.
Yeah.
That doesn't go away.
And no, it don't end. She said, okay then. She said, well, my real brother just tell me something anyway to get me out of state.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So well, I said, nah, I'm not going to tell you. Just tell you something to get you out of my face. You're all right.
That ain't what it's about.
Yeah.
I did the same to my brother. That's great. You want to talk a little bit about the contract, or just about sort of like what came down, some of the details? Because I know you went up to Dallas and you were part of a team that kind of like relayed the information to your local.
Yeah.
You don't have to get too much into details if you don't want to.
I will say this much right here. It's a contract. It's not what a lot of people expected. I might say this is not what I expected.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that I guess we got to carry for the next 4 years, and something that I know that we probably in the next 4 years feel like we got to do a lot of work on, and which I don't know if that'll lead to another strike, or if a lot of the details and stuff for this contract will be sent and gave to the UAW for them to try to work on along the way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people felt like it was some things in the contract that would somewhat divide the union. Mm-hmm. Felt like that the money that the ratification bonuses and stuff that were in the contract were actually overshadowed the contract.
Right.
And people would say yes to whatever was handed out to them simply because we were off of work on strike for a month and a half. It's some things in the contract that I agree with.
Right.
And there's some things in the contract that I don't agree with. One thing I will say that I agree with, and I got to praise the UAW for, is the no health care, the free health care. It didn't change. That's a plus.
Oh, that health care program. So actually, can we talk about that a little bit as well, especially in the context of what happened during the strike? So the healthcare program in the UAW nationwide is really good. And
yes, sir.
Something happened with that healthcare about 3 days into the strike that caused a bit of a stir when the CEO kind of canceled the healthcare for everybody, right? So can
yes,
you just
sir.
Talk a little bit about that and how that works out, and maybe how Medicare for All, so a program like that could be something that could prevent the boss from kind of having that sort of leverage on the workers?
Well, we actually receive free health care.
Mm-hmm. We work for that health care.
Well, yeah, we work for it. You're exactly right. And actually, brothers in previous years have fought to actually for us to receive free health care.
Yeah.
And one of the things were that was major was they were saying that they wanted us to pay, and I don't want to quote or get it wrong, but it was, I know 15 or 20% for our healthcare.
15 to 20% of the total cost?
Of the cost. Yes. Yes, sir.
That's a lot of money.
All right. Exactly. And, they had given out figures or whatever, they're giving out figures of what that cost would be. And just to be honest with you, that cost alone with your yearly wage would pretty much tear into at least a third of it.
Wow.
So, therefore,
the actual cost. So what you're saying is the actual cost of health. I don't mean to interrupt, but you mean the actual cost of health care would be a one third of what your salary as a worker at GM would be.
Yeah, because the way they explained it, to us, you know, I mean, say from like a family plan or whatever, you would be getting off of. I don't want to get it wrong. I really don't. But the family plan, you probably would get off of anywhere in the neighborhood of $1,100 or more dollars a month.
That is a ton of money.
Exactly.
That's more than rent.
And that's going from a person that actually pays zero,
right,
for healthcare. So I mean, now
you're talking no copay, nothing for prescriptions, none of that stuff.
Well, no, we actually have a copay. We have a copay, but it's not high. It's not high. I want to say our copay is $25 or $50.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, and we have a little minimum copay for prescription, and in which I have to praise the UAW brothers and sisters for what they negotiated in the past. Mm-hmm. It's lovely. You know, my buddy, when I first came into the General Motors, he said, "Hey man, you can have brain surgery for $100.
Hey, that sounds, I mean, I might need a new brain, so there you go.
Exactly, you know, you used to say, and I used to just look at him like, okay, then, yeah, so, yeah, you just talking. But, I mean, he pretty much wasn't lying, you know.
Cool.
Exactly, so to go from something like that to having to pay.
Yeah.
I mean.
A percentage.
Exactly, a percentage. You're gonna shake up your whole employee labor base, because the company is something different. They do pay for theirs.
Yeah, yeah.
No, on management side.
So, and in terms of like I think a lot about the way that the CEO of General Motors sort of decided that healthcare was just not going to happen during the strike. You have to get COBRA, which is like a 20% markup on each paycheck or whatever. Or 20% more in, no, you have to pay 20% more at the cost at the point of service or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, the union has to take on that amount. And also it tells you that the boss, the owner, or in this case is the CEO of GM, can just decide, you know, you don't have healthcare anymore because we're out of contract and we're not doing this and you're on strike. And I guess, how would a program like Medicare for All or something along those lines, about what like Bernie Sanders is pushing forward, how would that change the game in this scenario?
Okay, then you're talking about why we was on the strike?
No, I'm talking specifically about like Medicare for All, and how could that change the game in terms of how the boss can control your healthcare situation?
Well, you said medical care for all.
Yeah, universal health care at the point of service, free for everybody.
Oh, well, let's see. How can I put this? You remember when they did the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah.
All right. When they did Affordable Care Act, it actually. Before then, you know what I'm saying, temporary employees, whatever, mm-hmm. didn't receive health care.
They had nothing.
They had nothing. All right. Up under that act or whatever, it somewhat forced all companies or whatever, whether you're a temporary employee, as long as you make your 90 days and stuff,
right.
you receive some type of health care benefit.
Right, based on the nature of the size of the business, because it's got X number of employees, right?
Correct. All right. Well, that took care of General Motors and temporaries and stuff. But I guess if we did universal,
like you take the boss out of the scenario,
and take the boss out of this the scenario, and universal health care. Well. That right there is a hard one because of how General Motors is actually set up. And I don't know this right here to be true, you know, with Blue Cross, because we have Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. And at one point in time, General Motors was considered the to make the big, the, well, how can I put it? General Motors, the only company or entity that made more money than General Motors at one point in time was the only one was the IRS. All right, exactly. Because at one point in time, General Motors had 70% of the car market with Pontiac, right. Buick, Oldsmobile, Saturn, you know.
A lot of power,
exactly. Now, okay, and their health care. Like I said, don't know this to be true. It's just how it was told to me. And the health care, like Blue Cross Blue Shield, General Motors could actually pretty much... It's like they gave healthcare, but they own their own entity to give healthcare.
Right, they own Blue Cross because they had so much market share or whatever.
Right, it's exactly. It's almost like, let's see.
It's this idea that if you owe the bank $100 or whatever, the bank owns you. But if you owe the bank $100 million, then you own the bank because they're just so leveraged over.
Exactly, and I just let you run it because you're in the business of healthcare,
right?
And this is just how it was told. Don't know if this is true or not, you know. And that is the reason why we ended up. General Motors ended up with the healthcare, the employees that they had, because you paying in the healthcare, and they said that even now the reason why the percentage that if we didn't end up in the contract with the free healthcare premium, mm-hmm. we still would be paying back into General Motors.
Right, right. It's all just money moving around.
Yeah, it's just would be money moving around. So a thing of universal healthcare, we're still, I guess we still be operating, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
up under a government-sanctioned Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan that would still be pretty much operated by General Motors or whatever, yeah. I guess.
the difference of what I see is that they don't have, like, if it is a government-run program and it's not contracted out in any kind of way, which is critical, they wouldn't have the profit motive that a lot of these companies have, right?
Right, they wouldn't, but see, you know, like, take Canada for an example, right? Canada operates, like, somewhat universal healthcare.
Yeah, quasi. Like they have, like, the British NHS-type system.
Yeah, but doesn't it operate on the triage system? And that's where the problem come in mm-hmm. with it. Yeah. All right, if you were a person that needs, say, let's say a person that needs a heart that's 55 years old versus a 20-year-old that needs a heart.
Right.
20-year-old. Right. How you decide? Well, okay then. According to them, well, we give the heart to the 20-year-old because the 20-year-old, you know what I'm saying, in the scheme of things of lifespan, he has more years. He has more durable years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the 20, we just give it to the 20-year-old and the 55-year-old, we'll just.
You should have luck.
They shit out of luck, and we'll make the quality of life.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll give him a more quality of life, which you come out of doctor, you know what I'm saying, every week instead of every month, you know what I'm saying, and we'll just check up on you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that.
That ain't what I'm shooting for, you, by the way. I ain't for that. I want everybody to live good.
Exactly. You know, then on top of that, let's universal, and which I would love the idea of universal healthcare, but then you know you do have your I'm middle class blue collar
mm-hmm.
versus working your exactly versus your upper class white collar. Okay, all right. How would you fight that?
I mean my sort of approach is essentially to bring quite a flattening as so much as possible with among those classes mm-hmm. so that everybody is as equal as can possibly be. But I mean, in terms of materially making that happen, I think that programs like Medicare for All can at least establish the fact that like healthcare is something that everybody, every single person, no matter how you are, how old you are, no matter what background you're from, race, color, creed, etc., you know, everybody needs healthcare. Period. The end.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that's. I mean, I think it's a potentially uniting opportunity for working people to push for a program like that.
Correct. Correct. You say. I mean, it's. It's six in one hand, half a dozen in the other. You know, but it's good Christian principles. You know what I'm saying? That you want everybody to be safe. You know, and it shouldn't cost. It shouldn't cost, and it shouldn't cost. Caution be the problem. Let's see. Accessibility shouldn't be the problem. Nothing, but I mean, it's just some things that you got to look into in order for it to work.
Right. What needs? Yeah. But the important thing, and regardless of like, even if it is a medic, like whatever the system looks like, is that the interest is that you're actually interested in taking care of the people, and not anything else.
Exactly.
And if you can find a way to maximize the interest in taking care of the people over like anything, for example, profit, then I think that you have a system that can essentially be oriented towards that. And even if it's for like not nefarious reasons, but it's like contradictory or whatever reasons, like if that's a way to build power among working people and that's your agenda, then if Medicare for All or a program like that makes that more of a reality, then that's a good program, materially speaking.
Right. Right. It is.
Mm. So I don't know. Yeah, let's change subjects a little bit. So I guess one of the things that I think is really interesting. So the work that you do on the shop floor every day is really interesting to me, because we talked a little bit about this when we were at the picket. So what is your job on the floor? What do you do on the day to day?
I'm actually the union representative, or union steward, if you want to call it. Day to day labor disputes and operation. I am paid by the company to oversee supervisors and management to make sure that they're abiding by the contract.
I love that. And, that's great.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, they try to break it every 30 minutes.
Okay. How do they try to break it?
Man, issues, Doc, that you know, like, we have in our contract, a person is only required to work 10-hour days, you know, no matter what. After 10 hours.
That's a long day.
Exactly. And after 10 hours, you know, they're allowed to go home or whatever. And then the same thing goes for temporary employees. They'll tell a temp, hey, I need you to stay here 12 hours. Well, no, you already know it in the contract. This is what the contract say. You can only work a man 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you can volunteer to stay over and work 12, but
right.
You can't force a person.
Right. And that's a real, sort of a tightrope sort of situation.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly. We don't normally have seniority issues, you know. I'm going to be honest, you know, that seniority, management trying to break seniority. Older gentleman or older lady, whatever, you know, some of them might can move at the pace of an 18 or 19-year-old. Some of them actually move at the pace of an older gentleman or older lady, you know.
No shame in that at all.
Right, no shame in it at all. Okay, then, well, management wants to violate their seniority on the job. Okay, I need a person on that job that can move at this rate because I want this right here to be done at 7 o'clock or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you can't violate that person's seniority, and you know that. And that's that person's job. Due to seniority, they have the right to pick the job. You don't have the right to deter them from working on that correct. Job.
And how you come down on that kind of a decision really reflects what side of the argument that you're starting on, right? So a management perspective is that, well, you're trying to maximize output, and so you don't really care about the workers themselves. I mean, insofar as that you can get the most out of them, you do. But like on the worker side, you want to basically, you know, build these, you know, institutions of respect, and the only way that you can even justify working them around is through the management perspective.
Exactly. And to show you just how management actually would try to, in a instance like that, whatever, and I have to explain it to a lot of young people, you know, and just be honest with you, you know, you have to tell them this is a job is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yeah, that's true. Well, God, you know, that's true.
Yeah, you take off jogging and you pace yourself. You right. don't run wide open.
As a former distance runner, that is so true.
Exactly. Okay, then you know then on top of that, I mean, a person coming in realize now if you've been here a year or two, you know, you're a seniority employee, you know, your union brother and sister. You do not have to try to outwork the next man to prove a point to management.
Right.
You know,
very right? short term oriented.
And hey, look here, dude. Oh, Mr. Joe is 55 years old. I'm gonna show you I can do three times the work he's doing, or whatever. All right, and honestly, how management will play, and I have to, like I say, I have to get with management on every angle and every level.
Game respects the game, right?
Right, right. Because if it's a dispute amongst union brothers and sisters, I tell management, hey, wait a minute, before you all get involved, because when management get involved, it's discipline.
Right.
They just, hey, I suspend this person, I suspend that person.
Right. My job is negative.
Exactly. My job is to explain to management that, hey, look here, we're going to keep everybody inside the building. If you send two people home, that's two people that you need to do some work. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you'll be two bodies down. So tomorrow you'll be looking for two bodies to fill in. Keep them inside the building. Call me, and I'll talk to them. Yeah. And my conversation to them is going to be, hey, look here. We're all adults. We got a job to do.
Right.
You know, you might have issues with him or her, or she might have issues with you. But while we're at work, we work. We're gonna be working. I don't care if I'm fighting mad at you. We're gonna be working with one another for possibly 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years until we retire.
Right.
So I got to make work comfortable, fun, so those years and days and weeks will pass by. So, we got to resolve this issue. Whatever you don't like about this person or whatever, you talk to them about it or whatever, and we move on.
You got to exist in the same world.
Yeah, exactly. I tell management, you know, before you all try to resolve an issue amongst my UAW brothers and sisters, give me a phone call so I can talk to them first and we can resolve it.
And it is really important that it's such a clear line as to who you represent in terms of you represent the workers, and then the management represents the interests of management. That's not actually, like, I don't know. It's good that line's there, and it's very clear, I find.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I got a fundamental principle.
Yeah.
All right? If we were all rich, we wouldn't be here.
Right, you wouldn't work.
So, right, we wouldn't have to work. But since we all work together, we all need money. Okay? We all are family. Even though you're management.
They're there every day. They're the brother-in-law that you got to deal with, you know.
Thank you. There you go. That's a perfect way. You know what I'm saying? You know, I got my brothers and sisters, but you're right. You're a brother-in-law. I don't.
You got the in-law. Right. That's important.
I don't necessarily care for my brother-in-law or my sister-in-law, but I'm gonna tolerate you.
Yeah.
Because I got to see you for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, these are people that you have to work with every single day, too.
Exactly. So we all have to take care of one another.
In some sense, yeah. Of course.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I don't want to see you, no matter how much I don't like you, I don't want to see your family, you losing anything, or your materials or whatever at your home being taken or whatever. You shouldn't want to see that for me. And we don't want to see that for the workforce.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to be honest with you. That's daily. Daily.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've been back to work 2 days. If I could write down everything I've been through in these 2 days, you know what I mean, you'd be like, hey, do me a favor, man. Just put your application in somewhere else and go to work. It's too much. It's too much. I'm serious. It's too much.
Well, man, that's cool. Well, and I figured we could just for the last couple of minutes, just talk about some fun stuff. Okay. So you're a car guy, right?
Yes, sir.
You and your dad. We talked a little bit about this at the when we met. But like, so what do you do in terms of cars? Do you race, or you have friends that race, or any of this stuff like that?
Doc, I race and I chase cars. I do both of them, man.
You chase?
Yes, sir.
What do you mean by chase,
man? Love to try to hunt down old vehicles, man.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. People call them a barn find, but I'm gonna be honest with you, that's like a needle in a haystack, man. But
a barn find.
Barn finds. It's like the when you find a super rare car with low miles, still intact. Like a let's just say for instance, like a Dodge Daytona or something like that with a Hemi in it or whatever. Something that's worth $500,000, you know, and you get it for $2,500 and you leave that smiling because it was in somebody's barn that they left it, you know.
I had an uncle who had like old Fords, and he would just like hit like a Model A and stuff like that. And guess where he kept them? In his damn barn.
And the barn. See, that's what I'm saying. That's a barn find. You know, and I'm going to be honest with you. I hate to say it like this. Most of the time, the husband had the cars in the barn.
Yeah, he died or cherished something.
Them. Exactly. He collected them. And the wife, you know what I'm saying? Well, you know, my husband kept those old cars in the barn, you know what I'm saying? I will sell them. And you go out there and you be like, oh, my God, I hit the gold mine. You know, you know what I'm saying? For real, I'm a 49er.
I got to ask my Aunt D what she did with those cars after Uncle Winston died.
Yeah, you need to ask what you did with them. I'm serious, man. And that's why I say I chase. Now, you chase those kind. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Neil,
the racing, it is what it is, you know.
Tell me about the racing, man. I love it.
Man, racing is what it is, man.
Is there money involved?
Oh, yes, sir. There's money involved, man. Matter of fact, I was supposed to actually go to Florida this weekend, and I didn't, to pick up the race car with my buddy, and he went and cussed me out the whole way back. but I will say this much right here, man.
What kind of car?
Well, it was it's a Mustang, man. It's a 2000 Mustang.
Oh, nice. That's when I was coming up. Those were cool.
Yeah, and we thought we had a lock-in for a whole lot of cookies.
Oh, boy. It just didn't shake out?
Well, the fella wanted to pop the hood. And like we told him, you know, we thought this was a run with your broom. You know, we didn't want to look at your car. You know, you see what kind of car it is, and that's it. Get out there and race. And I'm going to be honest with you, Jeff. It's for a whole lot of cookies, man.
Yeah, I get it. Hey, I get you. I understand.
Yeah, it's for a lot. Yeah, it's for a lot.
You got to get a thrill some kind of way.
Man, well, it's you know, like... But my other buddy said, man, this right here, this race is for, it would have been for a yearly salary.
Nice.
You know, yeah, exactly.
So you had a Mustang. What did the other guy have?
Yeah. And my little street car is a 02 Camaro.
Oh, okay.
LS1 car.
Oh, that's that 8-cylinder. What's the numbers on that?
Yeah, it's 8-cylinder. Yeah,
I know what I'm talking about. Okay, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's LS, man.
Now, LS. I mean, 4.8, something like that.
Yeah, and I got a buddy actually. When he gets his car back, he's trying to try me. Well, two buddies. We actually are setting up a race that we're gonna do amongst each other. One fella has a twin turbo Mustang.
Oh shit!
And the other buddy actually has a 4-cylinder
Mustang,
Volkswagen Golf. No.
Okay. I was about to say 4-cylinder Mustang. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
He has a Volkswagen Golf.
They go fast though.
Hey,
they're light.
Like he, I'm gonna tell you, like he told me. Then this was funny. He said, "Don't be mad." He said, "Man, don't even put your head down. Just know you got whooped by the fastest Volkswagen Golf R in the country."
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's his exact words. He said, "I said, man, come on, you said the fastest." He said, He said, "I'm telling you now, the fastest one in the country when I get it back."
That's awesome.
Yeah. And when I tell you that son got enough money tied up in that Joker, he could have went and got him a. He could have went and bought him a brand new CO6 or brand new whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He could have went and got him a used Ferrari for the money he got tied up in that car. Oh,
yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I told him that's the only way I lose to a 4-cylinder is I know he went broke billing it.
Just the turbo, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just got an older truck not long ago myself. I got an old, it's not a, obviously, but it's like I got an old Dodge Dakota, which is always super fun. It's just like, I don't know, nice truck.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah. See, I'm telling you, you need to put a little pep in this step.
How do you do that? I don't know anything about the cars. How to make them go faster. Mine just goes slow.
I could tell you, the first thing it is taking all your money and just dumping it into it.
I don't have any of that.
Well, hey, I don't either, man.
That's
what happened to me. Yeah. That's what happened to me, for real. I don't have any. Man,
pour your money into the hood.
Yeah, just take it and pour it in it, man. I mean, the only thing I can say about a car, between a car and a woman is the car won't get up and leave you. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
It will break down.
You're going to put all your money in both of them.
Yeah.
No. Cool, man. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Man!
Well, man, next time you're around, like you're always welcome to just come say hey in New Orleans. I mean, we'll find a spot for you to stay if you need it. We'll get you, show you some nice people, some of our friends around town because it sounds sappy and stuff, but like I'm glad that we hooked up on that picket line. That was really awesome.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And like I said, once again, man, I appreciate because you all came up and you all showed me the passion that you had. Because like I said, it was a monsoon that day.
Yeah, it was nasty.
Plus it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't complain.
I'd rather be there than anywhere else in the world, man. It really was cool.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't say, hey, my shoes wet. Hey, I'm completely wet. I'm cold. Nothing. The only thing you all said, man, what y'all doing? Y'all doing it for a good cause and keep the faith.
It's the truth, though. It's the truest thing there is. Like we're here. Like we went there because like y'all inspired us. So it's almost like this synergistic effect of like mutual. Just I don't know. appreciate. It sounds like so dorky, but like it's like a mutual navel gazing sort of thing. And I think that when people show support for one another, like it does have that kind of ping pong effect.
It did. I mean, honestly, you know, when you all coming up and there's people stopping by, I know it's what pushed a lot of people to keep on coming out there and, you know what I'm saying, and holding their flags and their picket signs high, because I was like, well, hey, you know, these people believe in us, you know, to get what we're fighting for, you know what I'm
saying? Yeah.
And
the same thing everybody's fighting for. Everybody's fighting for fucking their fucking, like, their paychecks. Everybody's fighting for their health care. Everybody's fighting for the things that they need to live every single day. And that's not different from you, from us, from the person that lives next door to me, the person who lives across the street from me, and all that other stuff. It's all the same thing. You know, it's all the same fight. It's all connected.
Right. But it's good. But you just don't know. It's good to know there's people out there.
Yeah.
They believe in what you're doing more than what you believe in.
Yeah.
You know
the funny thing, and I've thought about this a lot. Like almost, it's almost like people are embarrassed to stand up for themselves because they feel selfish. And like, I wish that was a dynamic that we didn't have to grapple with, because standing up for yourself is not the wrong thing to do.
No, it's not. Honestly, it's a lot of people are timid. A lot of people don't want to they don't want to step on toes.
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing about the job that I do.
People don't want to report things to you, I'm sure.
Well, just think about it. How often do you know a person that goes to their supervisor or their superior or whatever and tell them, hey, you were wrong? Without being scared of repercussions.
Right. No, that's a very real thing to be afraid of.
Exactly. You know, another thing is, how often do you know a person that, you know, doing this job, they can go down, they will go down there, just walk by, you know what I'm saying, just see a team of management of five and speak to them and say, hey, how your day is going and all the above. And then you come and find out a infraction that they committed or whatever, and they knew that they were committing or whatever. Then you turn right back around 5 minutes later and you all are slamming doors, arguing upside down and all. And then after they correct that within 30 minutes, turn around, go right back down there and speak to them again like nothing. You know, I mean, it's so many ups and downs.
Yeah. And there's always this ever-pressing dynamic of they are the ones that give you your paycheck, so they're the ones that sort of like are owed whatever. And I mean, that's sort of the expected sort of power dynamic. Now, again, when you have people who are, when essentially you can, when you're aggressive, I find, and this is based on my own experience, like being a building rep in my school, that when you have a lot of cases to push forward, like management don't know what to do with that. They don't know how to deal with it because there's actually something that they have to contend with. You know, the fiat that they're pushing is not flying. I don't know. And there's a little bit of a convince, because teachers, in a lot of senses, like, they eat a lot of shit. You know, they'll deal with a lot of bullshit before they'll stand up for themselves. And that's not a bad thing necessarily in a moral sense, but in a material sense, it ends up really, really screwing us over. But for you, I mean, I don't know. Is that same or different?
Well, here's the thing. Teachers, just like labor, you know, in manufacturing or whatever.
Right.
You are the most valuable part of the organization. If teachers decide to do a bad job, then the kids are the product. They're bad product.
Right. No teacher would decide to do that.
Exactly. If we it's just like if you all stop working or whatever, who gets taught? If we stop working, what car gets made?